You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Carl here for the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show, WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, and my website, WhenItWasCool.com. And I've got a biography podcast special for you. Yes, I know if you're listening at Wrestling Observer, this show may sound a little different than my normal shows. I'm having to use a mobile equipment to record on this week, but bear with me. I think it'll be tolerable to get through. And this will wrap up my little series that's kind of postponed our regular rotation of shows. So we'll get back to those next week, where we'll start back with, you know, going through the long-form history of pro wrestling, the history of wrestling at Madison Square Garden. I'm going to start doing some pro wrestling magazine reviews. Going to work those in from the pages of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. All that stuff's going to start back next week. But I've been working on a series that's going to air on my free podcast feed that is a part of WhenItWasCool.com. I have a free feed over there called the Dragon King Carl Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling podcast, and I put some of our old Patreon shows up on there, and so I decided to do a series called the A through Z of pro wrestling history. And this will take a lot of my older biographies and that my Patreons over the years have heard, and maybe some of these have aired over at Wrestling Observer, and record several new ones as well. And so there were several letters of the alphabet I needed to get in to, and the letter Y was one of those, and there were a few choices to be had, although, you know, as you can imagine, the letter Y's not got a ton of choices, but I knew without question who the letter Y was going to be, and I knew I was going to record a new show for that, because I wanted to get a show in for one of the weirdest, most just goofy characters in pro wrestling in the last 30 years or so, the Yeti. So this was a WCW character. Look, I'm a fan of a mark of big, tall, giant wrestlers. Yeah, no, they almost never work out. I'm aware of that. And it's too bad. You know, Andre the Giant set the standard and was a absolute attraction. But before that, I mean, even before Andre, there were attraction wrestlers going back to, you know, the famous French Angel. And while he wasn't a giant, he did have acromegaly. And he had these very exaggerated features, giant hands, giant head. And so he was an attraction back in the days of Jim Blundos. And he was a big star. I mean, Maurice Tillet was a big name attraction of a wrestler. And throughout history, there have been those, a very tall guy, maybe one of the tallest wrestlers in history, Sky High Lee, back in the 1950s and 60s. And, you know, he wasn't a guy that really was pushed as a monster. He lost a lot of matches, but he was certainly an attraction. You had the big fat guys like Haystack Calhoun and T. John Thibodeau and people like that who were, you know, these big giant fat guys. There's always been a place for attractions in pro wrestling. It's just that Andre the Giant happened to be a very successful one. And whenever you have something that's a success in wrestling, you have many people who try to replicate that. And successes of giants have been few and far between, even though in the context of what professional wrestling is, which is this very exaggerated form of combat sport, very much blending entertainment with athleticism, even way back in the pioneer era. I mean, it blended circus acts. It blended strongmen, you know, the gymnast, vaudeville, mixed all that together with athletic competition, with wrestling. And pro wrestling over the years has just done the same thing with You know, even up to the modern era, lots of gymnastics, lots of aerial wrestling, strong men, big giants. This is certainly a place for giants in wrestling. But for whatever reason, and usually, oftentimes, I think it's because no one really has the patience to book a giant the way a giant should be booked. I mean, Andre the Giant was so well protected over the years. And let's be honest, in the early days, Andre the Giant was very, very good. I mean, people who only saw Andre the Giant from like the WrestleMania 3 and forward era really don't understand. Yes, he may have been at his physical biggest at that point in time, but athletically, you know, 10, 15 years earlier, he was really actually pretty good. So, periodically, promoters have tried to find people, taller than Andre. Andre was billed at 7'4", although that was a great fantasy. He was really more around 6'10", maybe 6'11" when he was, you know, Andre stayed slumped over a lot, and he oftentimes had this big afro, and so it's hard to really judge exactly how tall Andre was, although photographed, you know, standing beside people like, you know, different basketball players, Ernie Ladd, Ron Fuller, people who we know their exact height. Andre was right in that same range. So we know for fact, I mean, the fantasy may be 7'4", the reality is Andre was around 6'10 to 6'11". So anytime you can find somebody taller than that, so a 7-footer, you know, wrestling's got to grab them. And along came a fellow named Ron Reese, and he seems to be legitimately somewhere around the 7-foot mark. Most things have him listed at 7'2". He did play basketball at the University of Cincinnati, so he probably got legitimately measured at some point. Although, do not be mistaken, you know, just because he played a legitimate sport, football, basketball, whatever, does not mean that the statistics therein listed are legitimate. I myself played football in high school, and everybody, you know, fudged their statistics. Oh, you're 6'1"? Well, you're now 6'2". You're, you know, 205 pounds? No, you're 225. And I had I played on the football team where one of the people went to be a starter at the University of Alabama. They're the team that won the national championship back in 1992. He was a starter on that team, and I played football right beside him. I know how big this guy was. I played, you know, 2 years of football with this fella. And I know that even on the college roster, they exaggerated his height by about 2 inches. Now, he did put on some weight and some muscle, but they exaggerated his weight and size a little bit down there. And, you know, all sports are going to do that. So, is Ron Reese, he's still alive, 7'2"? I don't know. He's somewhere around 7 foot mark. He's a big, tall guy. So, you got my attention already. You got a guy taller than Andre the Giant. So what can we do with him? What is a Ron Reese? Well, as it so happens, he's going to be trained by another quote giant of pro wrestling, Big John Studd. Now, I'm a bigger fan of Big John Studd than most are. Many people, your wrestling pundits and such, don't think much of Big John Studd. He was a plodding, slow, big guy. He wasn't even really a giant. He wore big lifts in his boots, and he was a big heavyweight, but I certainly wouldn't say he was a giant. But goes to WWF, they put some lifts in his boots, and, you know, tell you often enough he's a giant, have him tell you he's a giant, and he's a giant. I liked Big John Studd. I liked the big clubbering monsters. I don't care how slow they were, how unathletic they were. You give me a big dude just slamming people, and that's right up my alley. So Big John Studd is going to be the guy who trains Ron Reese. So Ron Reese is actually the son of a notable athlete. Okay, so Ron Reese is actually Ron Reese Jr., and his father was Ron Reese Sr., and he was a member of the NCAA basketball team in 1961-1962 at the University of Cincinnati that actually won the NCAA championship in basketball. So he was a notable basketball player, and as you can imagine, Ron Reese Jr. went on to play basketball as well. He grew up in California, and He, you know, I don't know how much of this is factual and how much of this is reality. I'm not the biggest basketball follower in the world. I played a little bit of basketball back in high school, and I was terrible at it. Never really had a love for the game in any way. Never really followed it that much. This sounds a bit far-fetched, but perhaps it's not. But Ron Reese attended Monta Vista High School in California, played on the school's basketball team, and supposedly scored 2,082 points and competed in the 1987 Central Coast Section Championship. Then he went on to attend Santa Clara University, where he played basketball. And again, I guess it was at Santa Clara University. I think I said University of Cincinnati. That was his father. Santa Clara University, and where I guess he gets measured at 7'2" tall. But he didn't go NBA, so he wasn't so good as to go pro. I don't even really know if he got any tryouts or whatever. I'm not even really sure how NBA works. I'm far more familiar with NFL and, you know, training camps and you know, that the way they do, like the combines and stuff like that. Basketball, no idea, but Ron Reese never shows up in the NBA anyway. But he does go to train to be a pro wrestler, and I think fine career choice, although he didn't make a long run of it. He's trained by Big John Studd and made his professional debut on March 12th, 1994. He's up in the New England area, so somehow he relocates from California up to the northeastern United States. And he's wrestling as Ron Reese, and he gets a few names. As you can imagine, he's going to go through several gimmick changes, including by the time he becomes the Yeti, and this is the story gets ridiculous at that point. He called Big Ron Studd as a play on his trainer, Big John Studd, and I guess that's pretty dumb name. I mean, I can understand why you'd want to use it on the indie scene, but that's never going to take you to a big time promotion, Big Ron Studd, because everybody's going to say, oh, that's Big John Studd. Well, what if Big John Studd's, you know, not contracted your promotion? You're going to acknowledge him? You're going to what? You know, maybe he's got a Legends deal with WWE. There's going to be WWE action figures. I got one right now, but just bought it last year, of Big John Studd. So it's, you know, it's not the best name to have for a pro wrestler, but it's what he gets known as. He's anytime, and here's the thing about giants. We've talked about this previously in some of our series. You get a big dude, you get a giant, they're not going to stay around the independents long. And that's one of the reasons I think many giants don't acclimate well to the world of wrestling. You think about the Big Show, Paul White, when he comes in as the giant. I mean, he comes straight into WCW. Yeah, he spent time at the Power Plant or whatever, but he didn't do his time on the indies. He didn't get out there and learn his craft working in front of 50, 75, 200 people at some high school gym, you know, taking bumps for Mike Jackson or something. No. No, you see a guy that's over 7 foot tall and, you know, 3, 4, even 500 pounds, of course not. You're going to keep him a secret. You're going to teach him a few moves. You don't want him doing no fancy stuff. And you're going to, you know, some big promotion back then, WCW, WWF, whatever, they're going to try to get a hold of this guy and do something with him because he's a giant. For Pete's sake, they don't grow on trees, or maybe they do. I don't know where giants grow, but giants are hard to come by. In October 23rd of 1995, I was there live and in living color when the Yeti debuted. Yes, I saw it with my own two eyes right there, Huntsville, Alabama. Now, the debut was actually a pre-tape where he burst forth from a glacier of ice. Now, there's some problems here in that, despite the fact WCW at this point in time was owned by Turner Sports, the Ted Turner empire, global media empire, contained things like TBS, TNT, Turner Classic Movies, on and on it goes. They own a vast library of movies. They have many hundreds, if not thousands, of people working under this umbrella. They certainly have a research and development department. Nobody actually took the time to actually, I don't think anybody within the entire organization actually knew what a Yeti was. So I happened to do a podcast called Dragon King Dark. Perhaps you've heard of it. If not, you need to go to whenitwascool.com, and it's a free podcast. Subscribe on Apple, iTunes, you know, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, and subscribe to the Dragon King Dark podcast. Now, I'm doing a lengthy series right now called 100 of the Darkest Moments of Pop Culture History, but previous to that, we talked about the strange, the unusual, the unexplained, and yeah, there's probably a couple shows in there talking about the Yeti. The Yeti is a alternate name for the abominable snowman. It is the Bigfoot of the Himalayan mountains. If you know what Bigfoot is, the giant man ape-like creature that supposedly roams the Pacific Northwest of the United States, periodically being taken in blurry photos of and hiding out in the woods. He's the hide and seek champion since the 1960s. Well, the Yeti's his across the world cousin, tromping around the Himalayas. He's a giant white man ape creature, seldom photographed, but occasionally catch some blurry photo. There's fine footprints of the Yeti. I think there's a skull cap supposedly of a Yeti somewhere over there in Nepal or somewhere. He's the abominable snowman, for Pete's sake. You've all seen the Christmas movies, you know, he's in. You've all seen it. We know what the abominable snowman, that's the Yeti. Well, whoever put the act together in WCW didn't really know that. So they said Yeti, but they heard mummy. Oh, we're going to take this 7-foot-tall guy, we're going to wrap him in linen. We're going to make him a mummy like, you know, Boris Karloff back in the day, the mummy movies. Yeah, we've reviewed those over at When It Was Cool too. I love the mummy movies. We're gonna wrap him in cloth. He's big, he's tall, he's scary. Hey, and look, I'll be honest with you, I love this straight out of Memphis wrestling too. I'll when we get to the letter Z in this series, I'm gonna be talking about Zeus. And I said on that show, I will say in that show, if you listen to it in the future, that was a gimmick straight out of Memphis wrestling. Zeus should have been wrestling Jerry Lawler at the Mid-South Coliseum. Likewise, should have the Yeti. He's a 7-foot-tall dude wrapped in linen. We're going to call him the Abominable Snowman, but he's going to be a mummy. And so you got King Curtis Iaukea there. He's this very, exaggerated, very comedic, over the top, I don't know, wizard or something. And he's going to tell us he's found the Yeti for the Dungeon of Doom, and he's going to destroy Hulk Hogan. And basically what happens, I'm going to describe this as non-lewdly as I can. You've all seen the videos. If not, go to YouTube, go to the WWE Network and watch, type in Yeti wrestler. It's probably going to be the first thing you see. The Yeti and the Giant, one Paul White, they do in fact attack Hulk Hogan, not in the way you think they probably should. Two giant 7-footers, you know, clubbering forearms, kick him into the mat, repeatedly drop leg drops on him or what. Nope, that would make too much sense. They instead stand up and essentially do a standing fornication act with him, a man witch. I know that's an actual brand of meat sandwich. So they do a man witch with one Hulk Hogan. Got the beef in the middle, son, and the beef on the outside, and linen wrappings, and mullet hair, and spray tan, and 24-inch pythons just slapping together right in the middle of Huntsville, Alabama, the Von Braun Civic Center, named after famed Saturn rocket creator, Wernher von Braun. The rockets go up. Who knows where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun. Well, that wouldn't be the worst thing that von Braun would be involved in. Yes, he's got the meat sandwich slapping there on WCW Monday Nitro, and good old Carl's right there, ringside seats, watching this go down. A sight to behold. Wikipedia explains it this way. Reese's debut in WCW Monday Nitro on October 23, 1995, as the Yeti, the Dungeon of Doom's so-called insurance policy for the upcoming WCW World Heavyweight Championship match between Dungeon member The Giant and current champion Hulk Hogan at Halloween Havoc 1995. Initially introduced, supposedly, frozen inside a block of ice, the Yeti soon broke out of the ice to reveal a heavily bandaged appearance reminiscent of a huge mummy, and went on to interfere in the Halloween Havoc 1995 main event, where he and the Giant attacked Hulk Hogan with a double bear hug. Reese wore lifts in his boots at the event and bandages wrapped high on his head, which gave the effect of the Yeti appearing noticeably taller than the Giant. In reality, Reese is only about an inch taller than Wright, and caused an astonished Tony Schiavone to remark, "The Yeti," that's his pronunciation, not mine, "the Yeti is taller than the Giant." I only wish he would have followed it up by saying, "Heavens to Murgatroyd!" Following Halloween Havoc, the Yeti's ring attire was changed to resemble a masked ninja. At no point in time has he resembled a Yeti. In fact, Reese only made three more appearances as the character. An entrant in the 60-man Battle Royal at World War III, 1995, in a match against Barry Houston on WCW Prime, and in a match against WCW U.S. Champion One Man Gang. What a match that is. And One Man Gang was the letter O in our series, by the way, if you want to go back and listen to that, on WCW Saturday Night, January 1996, where Reese's character was renamed the Super Giant Ninja. Yes, because we know ninjas, masters of stealth, invisibility, and the Denmark Death Touch, routinely recruit giants to wear what resembles Power Ranger clothing and work WCWC shows. That would be the final appearance of the character. Oh, but wait, there's more. That's not the end of Ron Reese. It is the end of the Yeti, which I guess is the whole point of this show to begin with. But nevertheless, we'll continue onward and find out what became of the Yeti post-Yeti. After he ceases his yeteing, Reese became known as Big Ron Studd in 1996, and WCW announcers billed Reese as having taken the surname of his trainer, Big John Studd. Hey, as one does, you know. I was just thinking back to some of my mentors in the profession I'm in, and you know, I've often sat around and thought I should change my last name to theirs because of respects. In his column in WCW Magazine, Bobby Heenan, who had managed Big John Studd, expressed disdain over this angle. The temerity. WCW primarily used the Studd character as an enhancement talent. October 21st, 1996, again, going through the Wikipedia timeline here, he was defeated by one Jeff Jarrett. On the March 2nd, 1998 edition of WCW Nitro, Reese joined Raven's Flock as, get ready for it, this is very creative, Reese. Oh, but it's respelled like R-E-E-S-E instead of R-E-I-S. You see what they did there? They kept this the same name, it's just a different spelling. Reese. Of no, like Prince or Madonna. No first name needed. Raven claimed that Reese's size had made him an outcast from society, leading him to seek acceptance within Raven's Flock. Reese acted as Raven's enforcer, though he was unable to prevent Goldberg from defeating Raven from the WCW U.S. Championship. He also suffered a loss to Juventud Guerrera, yes, the luchador at 1998 Great American Bash. Reese's last appearance was on June 29, 1998, episode of WCW Monday Nitro. Saturn pinned Reese with a Death Valley driver. After being released, Reese toured Japan as Big Bomb Jones. I think maybe Ron Reese's biggest weakness in pro wrestling might not have been his in-ring work, although, you know, wasn't like Luthez or anything, but it might have been the fact that nobody could come up with a decent name for him. In 2003, after touring the Far East as Big Bomb Jones, he returned to America, began working for Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling. Now, you may say, well, what kind of dirt mud show outlaw independent is that? Well, there was a time period Dusty Rhodes was ostracized from everybody, and he started his own promotion. Yes, this is a Dusty Rhodes presentation, Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling. So, this is, while it is an independent group, it is run by one of the most famous names in the business. It was there that he returned to the Big Ron Studd name. Even Dusty couldn't save this deal. He formed a tag team with Glacier. Yes, Big Ron Studd and Glacier won the TCW Tag Team Championship. That luminous event came January 3rd, 2004. For all of wrestling history, when the book of pro wrestling history is finally written, and I am writing it as we speak over at whenitwascool.com, the ultimate history of pro wrestling zone, help yourself and you're welcome. It will list Big Ron Studd and Glacier as the TCW Tag Team Champions. Now then, only one other man in all of wrestling might could do something with this. Who do we know in pro wrestling that has an impeccable track record of great booking ideas and decisions? If only there was someone. We think back to the 1930s, the Goldust Trio. Could they have done something? Well, maybe. We think, you know, the NWA era of wrestling. What would Sam Muchnick do? We come forward, man, there's so many possibilities. What, Bill Watts, what might he do? Sandy Scott, I've got it. Vince Russo. What would Vince Russo, in his infinite wisdom, what could he do with it? Well, turns out this was a period of time where Vince Russo was working the Christian promoting gimmick. I think he had wrote him a book, Redeemed or something, Redemption or whatever. He had him a promotion. Perhaps you've heard of Ring of Honor Wrestling. Well, this is not that. This was Ring of Glory Wrestling. Vince Russo sees this 7-foot-tall guy, and he's like, bro. And he brings him in. And he literally makes him the abstract character, just like Marvel Comics, the abstract of the universe is eternity. The abstract of the thing between good and evil is the in-betweener. There's the watcher. There's the abstract concepts of time, all these great characters. Vince Russo sees Ron Reese and he says, that guy, bro, is evil, bro. And that's his name. He's evil. He lost. Heaven help us, I hate to report this as being true, but on February 26th, God help us all, 2005, the year of our Lord, evil lost to Joshua the Carpenter. And that put a nail in his career. just for funds. Let's go to Google. Let's go to cagematch.net. I'm betting Ron Reese is probably didn't have 50 matches in his whole career. We type in Reese, R-E-I-S. Here we go. It redirects me to R-E-E-S-E, like geese, but with an R. Also known as Ron Reese. Ron Reese, different spelling. Big Ron Stud. Ron Stud, minus the big. B.B. Jones. Evil. Super Giant Ninja. The Yeti. Somehow or another, they've got SWAT in here. Special Weapons and Tactics, SWAT. And I don't know how we missed this one, Vanilla Gorilla. CageMatch.net has him listed as from San Jose, California. Who else do we know from San Jose, California? At 7'2" tall, 361 pounds. We have Big Ron Reese, Reese, BB Jones, Evil Reese, Super Giant Ninja, SWAT, Vanilla Gorilla, Yeti. And let's go to his matches. How many matches does he have listed here in Cage Match? Which is probably fairly correct. Oh, I wasn't far off. 58 matches. I wasn't far off that. All right, so they have his last match as having taken place in August 17th of 2019, so not that long ago, in a 20-man rumble in North Carolina. Mr. Hughes won a battle royal that also included one Ron Reese. February the 1st of 2019, a gauntlet challenge match. Brian Pillman Jr. Wins, and the Yeti, as the Yeti, listed as the Yeti in God Bless America, Atlanta, Georgia, and apparently on pay-per-view, come hell or high water. I wish they had like their records listed, because so far I don't know of a match Ron Reese has ever won. So far he hasn't won. Rodney Mack versus Vanilla Gorilla. No contest. That was in 2011. I have to go back to 2005. This is where Joshua the Carpenter defeats Evil. He still hasn't won a match. Oh, here we go. We get a win here. Barry Windham and Ron Studd defeat Barry Windham and John Studd. This is for Dusty's Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling. Beat Jason Sugarman and Scotty Riggs. So there's one win. Okay, Dustin, Dusty, and Ron Studd defeat Fake Goldust, I kid you not, Jason Sugarman and Scotty Riggs. So there's two wins. Oh, wow. In 2001, Bob Armstrong, Dusty Rhodes, and Larry Zbysko beat Barry Windham, Ron Studd, and Steve Lawler. What a match it was. Okay, won a battle royal in 2001. That's three wins. No contest with Abdullah the Butcher in the year of our Lord 2000. B.B. Jones and Genichiro Tenryu defeated Naoya Ogawa and Shinya Hashimoto back in 2000 at the Ricky Dozan Memorial TV show in Yokohama, Japan. I have got to seek out this match. Got to. That's four matches I found he's won in his lifetime. Juventud beat Reese. Van Hammer beat Reese. Okay, Horace and Reese beat Juventud Guerrero and Van Hammer. So it's okay, he's got a couple wins here. Beats Van Hammer, beats Chavo Guerrero Jr. So I think we're up to six or seven. Looks like Jim Duggan beat him several times in a row. He won a squash match over Mike Nova back in 98. So he's got a few wins along the way. It's not, looks like, yeah, there's a string of an enhancement wins as well. Early on. So I guess he had a few wins. Looks like maybe he's lost far more than he ever won. But anyway, our story here is about the Yeti. The Yeti. The Yeti. There's no letter A in the word Yeti. Y-E-T-I. Y-E-T-I. Not Yeti. 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 And that's not a mummy. One's from Egypt, one's from the Himalayas. One has white, shaggy fur. The other has, you know, wrapped in linen, perhaps with buried in a sarcophagus within a pyramid or a tomb. The Yeti. That is your letter Y. You're welcome. If you like more luminous content like this, we've done shows on real mummies, in fact, and even real Yetis. So what are y'all doing? Go to whenitwascool.com. You need to smash that Patreon button. Smash it. We got Patreon packages starting at $1. We've got almost 2,000 shows in our archive. So what are you even doing? What are you even doing with your life if you're not a Patreon subscriber over there right now? Right now. We have a very positive community. It's not full of trolls, haters, or ignorant folks. It's full of good people who want to have fun. That's what we do over there. Retro pop culture. I'm not even going to try to hard sell it. Look, if you want to miss out on this, it's your life that's going to be worse for it, not mine. So come on over, check it out, have fun. Yeti! See you here again soon. Hey, next show, the Z one. Z is going to be Zeus. We're going straight to Mount Olympus next, buddy. And you think the Yeti was something? You were right, the Yeti was something, but so will be Zeus. See you then.
WhenItWasCool.com.
The Run DMC album. Basically, it's tricky.
Your source for retro pop culture fun.
You're a yuppie.
Patreon funded.